Hello, everyone, and welcome into the Griplocked preview for the Music City Open presented by Lone Star Disc. Super excited for this tournament because this is the first and I think actually the only Pro Tour event I'm going to this year. I'll go to Worlds and USDGC.
Yeah.
But those aren't Pro Tour events.
Yeah, quite a lineup.
And this is also my first Pro Tour event I'm attending in years. So I'm excited to see how things change. We'll talk about that in a second. First, we got to attack this course. We have yet another course redesign on the same property. I almost feel like this is a requirement to be on tour this year. Where you like
a lot.
This is what the Open at Austin had happened. Waco, they introduced a new course. Jonesboro had happened, and here.
Yeah.
And the other event so far is chess.com.
The next tournament's going to be a major at a completely different course.
Yeah, but at least that one, we don't think it's been redesigned, but you never know. I think this one, again, from what I've heard, was a redesign to try to make the vendor village in a better area. That seems to be the theme.
It's kind of a theme, yeah.
So I think that's probably kind of what it's going for here, but it still is a mixed style course with mainly open holes where the woods come into play, either throwing out of them into the open or from the open into the woods or out of the woods into the open, back into the woods. There's not really any fully wooded holes, but the woods still come into play, and there's still plenty of OB to make this a technical course. And there's actually a really interesting design feature. I believe it was hole five when I was looking at the course practice round on Ezra's channel, where hole five, there was a preferred high route. And instead of taking it out by putting a mando in, they just put a board across it and painted it green, not bright red like some other courses have attempted to do. They painted it green so it blended in, and they didn't make it a mando. It just cut that high window a lot tighter. So it like makes players think a lot more.
I think this is interesting. When I was watching it, I thought I was looking at the wrong hole for a second because I'm like, wait, I don't see the Mando marked on the caddy book that I had next to it. But I think this is actually an interesting idea. I think a lot of people would immediately throw that up there and just assume, well, now let's make it a triple Mando. But I think it's wildly more interesting when you make it thick enough that it will deter a route to a certain window, and then you still give the players the option. If you still want to throw over top of this
thing. That's like everyone in the practice round did.
Yeah, I think that, and it's also something they can fine tune really easily. So like if this year they find that it's still super easy to throw on top, maybe you move it up just a little bit and you see if next year it deters them until you can accomplish what you're trying to accomplish. But whenever like a great example would be like if at Jonesboro, if you had holes like this, when they're playing in that kind of wind, you're basically saying, okay, do you want to throw the high route? But now you're going to expose your disc to the wind more versus getting less distance, but going low. I think it's a very interesting concept, and you can apply this to a lot of different parts of the course. Just the idea of putting that horizontal obstacle there that forces you to go over or under it. It's actually quite interesting.
Yeah. And shout out to them legitimately for painting it green, because it really does. Like, can you tell it's artificial? Absolutely. Does it stick out like a sore thumb? Not really.
No, not really.
It's just kind of there.
Yeah.
It just kind of exists.
Well, it's not a barn.
It's also not a barn.
Yeah.
It's also another good point. But it just kind of exists there. And I think that's a very important thing. Now, as I mentioned, I'm going to this event. I'm going with just a general admission pass. So I'm very curious to see what it's like at a Pro Tour event just as a spectator. Because where this is my first Pro Tour event in a long time, this is also, I think, the first Pro Tour event I've ever went to that I haven't been caddying or had a media pass.
Yeah.
So I'm just kind of just walking into this thing.
I feel like Nashville should
admission.
Have a pretty good crowd. I mean, I think Jonesboro was kind of weak last week. I feel like I didn't notice a very big
gallery. I felt like that every week so far, but I'm wondering
I've seen
how much
some
of
that
it,
are. No, that's well not true. That the one in Texas outside of Austin was huge. I think it was Austin. That's where Antla won.
Yeah, but it looked huge on. Was it huge the whole time?
No,
it was just huge on 18.
Well, I'm gonna judge them by that because that means that there's people there.
Well, that's what
people
I'm saying.
That spent
I'm
money
curious.
To go there. Like, you're never gonna get like the problem is, and it's not a problem. It's actually a good thing. The tour has so many interesting players that are spreading out right now that like I don't judge a gallery until I see like the final few holes on the lead card, because that's where I can kind of see this is all the people that showed up on the Sunday. And I at Jonesboro, I just thought like it was okay, but it wasn't great. That's obviously. I don't know what the disc golf community is like there, but I think Nashville should be pretty big.
I would imagine. Now, one thing I wanted to talk about here that's confusing to me as a spectator coming is on the spectator map, there's like these zones. So like the red zones is where general admissions is, like where I can walk. Looks like I'll be able to see most of the course. But what's confusing is like if we pull it up, and I'll show Trevor on my phone, they have them all numbered. So there's like spectator area 1, 2, 3, five, six, seven, like one through six, basically.
Yeah.
I don't have an email. I read everything to like see, are you telling people like, oh, general admission, you only have access to spectator areas one, two, three? Or is that just for reference of like, I'm meeting you, oh, I'm in spectator area six?
It might just be for reference.
It looks to be just for reference because all it says is spectating zone, but then it says in parentheses with number. What? So I'll be curious if I like get a pass and it just says like,
no,
you're allowed into
up.
One, two, and three or something.
I feel like anytime you're going to create, if you're going to make a good map or like spectator key like that, you want to, if you're going to create a zone, you might as well number it so that way it's easier for people to reference and get around. Like I think
that's what I'm thinking.
That would make the most sense. I mean, if they limit you as general admission to that, that'd be so silly. Because like I said, these tournaments, it's not like there's 25,000 people there. Like,
no,
you better give general admission some good access.
You definitely hope so, and that's what I'm really excited for. Is from that, and then the only other qualm I have with looking at the spectator map is it does seem that like in some courses just aren't going to lay out this way, but the vendor village food area is like really not close to any holes. It's really only close to like the T of one and like where three kind of comes through. And so like, it seems like once you get out to the course, it's like, if you want
to
grab lunch and you're on hole six,
yeah,
you got to walk all the way back.
That's tough.
Which is where USCGC, like some properties, I think this property it's just not possible, but I think that's really what it comes down to. But we've just been so spoiled with USDGC where it's like, you have this loop where you can watch one through five, seven, and then like watch them tee off on eight and watch 16 and 17. And like the food's right in the middle of all that.
Right.
So like you can kind of go off to multiple different parts of the course.
Of course,
you're always a 5 minute walk from the food.
I say when you have the style of USDGC is almost like it's like a central hub and the course kind of surrounds it. It moves out from that center. Yeah. So it never gets too far in one direction. The furthest you get is out there like 10, 11, 12. And you're still not like forever away from it. It's not, you just walk back a few holes and you can cut across the property as well. But yeah, I do think that's kind of dependent on what the property offers.
Yeah.
I think this course in general, like this event hasn't even existed at this course and in its full Pro Tour status for that long. So I think right now with the course redesign thing, I think a lot of these designers, they take it very seriously and very personally when they get feedback, I think. And I think they're super antsy to switch things around. And I think early in the event, it's fine, but you're always going to get feedback.
Always.
About holes.
Yeah.
There are Masters champions at Augusta that are suggesting they change. It was Vijay Singh who suggested they lengthen hole 12, which is the most iconic par three probably in the world. Which is like, that's just to say, no matter how awesome your course is or how long it's been played, there will always be suggestions for change. So I don't have a problem with this one at all, but I will be curious to see like, our course is eventually going to take a stand and be like, let's get 5-6 years under our belt. Let the holes grow on people, because that will also happen, because you're never going to establish a memorable tournament without doing that. And I also, on a property like this, they already have kind of a challenge cut out for them because a lot of the holes look similar. They blend in similar.
Yeah.
It's very difficult to design a disc golf course where you can make, I mean, I would say if you can make 60% of the holes really pop into your mind, like Maple
That's
Hill.
Yeah.
One thing that Maple Hill does is they've been able to create these holes where, and it's not just because it's a famous course, genuinely, there are some holes at Maple Hill you forget about.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But there are a number of holes that really stick in your brain as signature holes, and that's going to happen in any course. And I think that is like the goal, and you're never going to do that without a little bit of time as well as design. So I think that, you know, this course, I'll be curious to see how it plays this year, but I'd like to see some of these courses eventually just be like, okay, we've got a decent layout. It's playing well. I don't think there's been a course yet this year that we've been like, well, that just didn't work out for the tour. Like, that just hasn't been the case. Looking at the course, you have to see some similarities to some of the courses we've been playing lately, especially last week. Similar style of golf, plenty of margin for error off the tee, which means there's going to be a wide range of players that can score. Decent amount of shorter par threes, which means there's going to be plenty of birdie opportunities for even the guys who can't throw quite as far. And it could be a huge difference depending on whether or not there's wind.
Yeah. So let's talk about some of these players coming in. First off, when you think Music City Open, if you've been around disc golf long enough, you think Chris Dickerson. But yesterday he posted this on Instagram, giving us a little insight into an injury. So he said, after having two radiologists and an orthopedic surgeon review my MRI images, there are a lot of findings. I have moderate to severe osteoarthritis in my hip. It's bad enough that it's caused multiple bone spurs. I also have a vascular necrosis. So this means that there is a part of my hip that's not getting blood flow, and as a result of that, my bone is dying. The necrosis is just starting, and it's very tiny and localized for right now. My hip is apparently deformed enough that they asked if I was born with a birth defect or had been in a major car accident. I've never had any issues with my hip until my T-pad slipped at the DGPT Championship in October. After rehabbing it all off-season, it felt 90% better. There are certain things that can cause pain in the front of my hip or groin, but it's more than manageable. Seth Muncy suggested I get an MRI after discussing my pain with him at chest.com in Florida. We were hoping to rule out any major problems. This is obviously not the result I was hoping for. The doctors I have talked to so far have told me my only options are shots for pain and eventually a total hip replacement. They've also said that if I can put off the hip replacement until I am 50, at least, that's ideal. I'm already making appointments with some doctors to look into some alternative therapy options like PRP or exosomes. I've been told by the doctors in my area that I do not need to stay local for this. So if you or someone you know is a specialist in orthopedics and or sports medicine doing alt therapies, let me know. I'd love to get as many opinions as possible. This shouldn't have any extreme impacts on my disc golf career. The biggest thing right now are keeping blood flow to the area, continuing PT to strengthen my muscles around the hip, and finding a specialist for alternative therapies. My pain is minimal to none for now, and I'm hoping to keep it that way as long as possible. Know that I am far from done in disc golf. I've accomplished some great things in my career, but I have a lot left to give this sport. So with that post coming out days before Music City, how do you think this is going to affect him going to the event?
I don't know. I mean, it was like I was reading through that post and I was like, oh, man. Like, and like, don't get me wrong. It seems like he's got like it's a serious medical issue that eventually need attention. But then he kind of like ended it by being like, this shouldn't impact my disc golf career. And I'm like, OK. And like he didn't spend any time in that post being like, yeah, this is why I haven't been playing the way I wanted to, like, blah, blah, blah. Like, it sounds like it's just like something that he just wanted to share that, like, will eventually could become a problem. And, like, I hope it doesn't during his playing career. But I don't think, I mean, he's been playing well this year. This isn't something he probably just got news about. So I don't expect it'll change his chances here.
I disagree in the fact of I do think he just got news about this. It seems like chess.com was when he got the MRI, and he, from the wording of that post, to me, it seems like he basically just heard it. So I don't think it's going to affect him physically, but I do think it could have an effect on him mentally. Just now you know kind of what's going on. It can be harder to trust, or things that you were just threw away as like a minor ache and pain, you now know there's something a lot more serious going on.
It's true.
So I think this isn't going to be... He's the one saying, like, physically, I'm not in that much pain. We're doing management. I'm doing all I can, you know, and it seems fine for now. But there is now a mental barrier of, like, you know there is something going on. And you know kind of what's going down the road. And when you feel that pain, you know it's a lot more than just a, man, I wonder why my hip still hurts since October. Now you know why your hip still hurts. And you know there's something more serious. So I'm more thinking this could affect him mentally than physically in the short term. Obviously, physically in the long term is what he's focused on. But whenever you have something like this going on outside of the disc golf course, it causes one of two things. Either your mind's so focused there you can't focus on disc golf, and that results in poor play, or your mind's so focused there you can't focus on disc golf and you play freely, and next thing you know, you're in contention with a chance here.
You better hope he wins.
Spoiler alert, I didn't put him in my top three because it's kind of hedging my bet. If he wins, I get 4 points from your bet. If he doesn't win and someone else does that I pick, I could still get three there. So
it's true.
I have basically four players in my top three right now by not putting him in there.
It's fair enough.
Way to think about it. Now, this is kind of the last style of course like this that we play before we head to Champions Cup, which is not this style of course at all. What are some players that you think this style kind of works with them, or they have good all-around games that really need to take advantage of and execute this weekend to give themselves some more confidence going into the major coming up?
I would say this is like these are events that really the entire field should be taking advantage of, because like I said, I don't think that these courses right now are catering to any specific style of play. I think there are some players who have better chances. I think Ezra Aderholt is the first name that pops to mind, somebody who has been taking advantage so far, but like this is could be his big chance to get a win. So he immediately pops into my head. You know, as far as the leaderboard has been pretty sound lately, I think this would be a big event for Simon Lazat, who finally had a good event last week to kind of make a move and grab a win and kind of do what he does and be like, well, Simon, he kind of was neither here nor there. And then all of a sudden he you know, has a good finish last week and then grabs a win. So I think that could be big for him. For the most part, yeah, I think these events are wide open. And unfortunately, right now, that benefits the superstar players just as much as anybody else. I think in the past, you could argue that the wide open courses that really cater to everybody could mean that just somebody has to get hot and they have a good chance of winning. They could be anybody. It could be a Mason Ford. It could be, you know, somebody from down the leaderboard. The problem is there's so many guys that are playing, so many of the best players that are playing at such a high level right now that the odds are that one of those guys is going to get hot. And unfortunately you're not beating that. So, that's kind of been the issue. You know, there's like this just gate right now that is Gannon Burr and Anthony Barella. And it seems like somebody breaking through that is going to be darn near impossible. And then you got to deal with Calvin as well. So I guess it's hard for me to look at this event and see somebody just surging up and beating those guys. Like I said, there's a few like Simon and Ezra who have shown signs that they've almost been able to win these past couple weeks. And I think that a guy like that, who's already on the fringe, could win, but seeing somebody just come out of nowhere, you know, I don't necessarily see that happening. I think Dickerson's another one you could throw into the hat. He's had a quietly good season so far. And I think he is capable of winning, but I don't know. I think we may be getting to the point where you really need a course that's very specialized in order to have kind of a surprise win, or maybe some conditions that kind of create a little adversity and a little bit of randomness. But when the best players in the game are all in form, which right now they are, or at least there's enough of them that are, it's just going to be tough week to week. You're just not going to beat those guys.
Yeah, I think it's funny you brought up Mason Ford, because I think a lot of people forget he won this event.
Yeah.
Just a handful of years ago, over Ricky Wysocki, because it was a scandal, not scandal, but people on the internet were doing what they wanted to do, saying that Innova paid Ricky to throw.
Yeah.
So that Mason Ford could have
his
win
there. Was it a fool?
It was an NT.
It was an NT. Yeah.
It was when there was the NT and Pro Tour going on at the same time. The two plays that came to my mind here, I'm not necessarily thinking they need to execute in the terms of they need to win, but I think they need to get themselves back on track, because they both have a shot at Champions Cup. We're going a little old here. We're going Ricky Wysocki. First off, he hasn't been in contention since chess.com.
Get something going.
I think he has a really good chance at Champions Cup. He's very good at Northwood, but he's a big momentum player. So I think if he can get himself into the top five this week, that could bode really well for him. Because remember, he's still on a major drought that goes back, is it 2017?
For a major?
Yeah, I think it does. Yeah. I think we're closing in on 7 years.
Yeah, it's been pretty crazy.
How is 2017 7 years ago? That's wild. It is, though. But regardless, Ricky Wysocki is in a little bit of a major drought right now.
A lot
of
it.
Champions Cup really lines up well for his game with the move to Northwood. But I do think he's a big momentum player, and I think that Music City could be crucial in him winning or not winning at Champions Cup.
He's kind of gotten left behind so far this season.
The other player that I think has a similar story to that, but a much worse start to their year, is Paul McBeth. He has a lot of history at Northwood. He plays that course well. He won Worlds at, you know, that Ledgestone, but Northwood was a big part of him winning Worlds. He knows that course. He plays it really well. Has no momentum right now. He's flat. This is the first time I think I've said his name all season, pretty much. So I think this course doesn't necessarily line up perfectly for his game. He is an all-around player, so there's not really any game course that does. It lines up a lot better for a lot of other players' games, but if Paul can get his way into the top 10 here, I think that could be a huge confidence boost going into Champions Cup. If not... You know, it might just kind of be a year of irrelevance, unfortunately.
I feel like I've kind of just lost confidence in the idea that he is going to be playing at an elite level. I don't even know. I don't want to say ever again, because he's not that old, but like it just doesn't seem on the horizon right now. I think he just took did he just take 50th at the last event?
I'll be straight with you. I have no idea.
I think I saw somebody post about it on Facebook and everybody got all riled up about it, but it's like, I mean, yeah, here's the thing. I know he's had some injury problems, but it wasn't that long ago that he was competing for a major title at the European Open. That didn't happen forever ago. It wasn't that long ago. Just last season, he was able to win, I think it was the PCS that he won with good players in the field. So we're not that far away from good play from him, but I don't know. It's just like you're going to have to see. He's going to have to really light a fire under his butt. And he just became a dad. I understand he's got a lot of things going on. This is not a new narrative in disc golf. Your life gets busy. It takes a little while to get things going again, but that gets harder and harder to do the older and older you get and the further in your career you get, because you got these young guns that you got to try and beat. So I I just kind of see this as a, hopefully a season where he can slowly gather himself. And by the end of the season, maybe he's rounding into form. Maybe he can, at near the end, put together some good tournaments, sneak into the playoffs, who knows, or just compete for a major at the end of the season. USDGC, that would be great to watch.
Worlds.
But at the end of the day, like, as somebody who, yeah, it, well, Worlds is, there's going to be a huge check mark on Worlds. It's going to be very highlighted on everybody's radar, even if he's not playing well, just because of where it is.
Yeah.
And his ties there. But yeah, I think what everybody really, if you enjoy watching Paul, we just want to see him get back to a point where he's playing decent golf, where you can at least tell yourself, like, if he plays well this week, then he may have a chance to win. Because right now, that's just not even the case. Like, that, we don't really, we haven't seen that in a while. We haven't seen the flashes of greatness. So
yeah. Well, so his season so far started 52nd at chess.com, 64th at Waco, 22nd at Open at Austin, 57th at Jonesboro.
It's bad.
Open at Austin's his only cash so far this year.
He's getting beat by a ton of guys. Like, it's
this is the lowest his rating has been since,
oh gosh, probably 2018.
Oh my goodness.
Oh, is it?
We're scrolling. 2012.
Oh my gosh.
If I just scrolled right, 2012. January 2012, he was 1036, and scrolling up, I do not see it getting out of the 1040s. Yeah, he's at 1037 right now. So 12 years ago, this is the lowest Paul McBeth's been rated in 12 years.
Yeah, like I said, it's like, this happens, you know, life's busy. He's just out of form right now. He's had some injury issues, but like, and I don't know. I don't hear him talk about, I guess I'm not following as closely maybe as I need to, but I haven't heard him talk about like, oh, my shoulder's still bothering me. I think it's just like, sounds like he's just trying to figure things out again. Like, just trying to get his game back together. I feel like that's been him for the last like 4 years. It's just been like tournament to tournament, just trying to get his game back to where he wants to be. And it's tough. They're one of the hardest things in sports is to be a guy who was unstoppable and could do no wrong on the disc golf course, and then have that fall apart a little bit. You know, if you ever known Paul, he would tell you about even later in his years, in like the late 2000 teens, I guess I should say, when he was still very good, he would talk about wishing he could get his putt back to where it was in 2015. You know, it's been a long time since certain parts of his game have been at their highest level, and a time where the field is just getting better and better and better. And that's very frustrating to go through. That's very difficult. It can be so confusing. I mean, imagine, for those of you watching at home, just try and picture, if you're average disc golfers like us, try and picture that your body at one point knew how to do the very best in disc golf ever. Like, you had a putt that was better than anybody's, it went in all the time, and now your body has done that before, and now you can't figure out how to do it anymore.
It
would drive you to insanity.
We've experienced it on a much smaller scale, in college and we're talking like, well, you know what, rating points wise, similar scale. Rating point slip wise, I went from 980 to 9. I don't even know where I'm at. Actually, I've fallen bigger.
You would play like 940, 950 rated golf most of the time.
You're talking to someone who's rated 989.
Yeah.
Okay, you don't get there.
Well, 989.
COVID rating.
Yeah, that's COVID rating. But I'm just saying, like, that's crazy.
I'm back
crazy
in my COVID rating point. I only have like four rounds counting.
Oh, that's
this
nice.
Is my best hope to get a 1,000 right here. Anyways, but no, it's a very frustrating, on a real note, to be someone like where, not comparing my career at all to Paul's. Let's put that
no,
clearly.
No, pretty same.
But 2019-ish, somewhere in there, when I was playing college, I was playing all the time. I know what I'm capable of, and it's hard to mentally readjust to where you're currently at skill-wise. Because you see, like, I see a hole, I see a putt, I see whatever, and I still have that mental confidence, because I'm only a few years removed from it, to think of like, oh, I can do that. Oh, no, of course I can go out and do whatever. But physically, I can't anymore, because I'm not as good as I was then.
There's a sobering reality that every disc golfer will meet one day, which is that if you do not put in the kind of reps that you put in when you were super hungry for success, you will not attain that level
of
success.
Now, it is a lot less frustrating for me, branded one of the bogey bros, who's just making entertaining disc golf content, and doesn't matter how good I am. I can't imagine if like I was like Mr. Untouchable, breaking records left and right, top of the world, no one could ever beat me. If I was at my best, legitimately no one in the world could beat me, to be like trying to get like, that's what my confidence and my mind's at. I can't imagine that.
Yeah,
that's crazy. But like we said, it's similar to when Tiger Woods returns to the Masters, even just recently, like, what was that, last weekend or 2 weekends ago, the guy still found a way to make the cut, because like, there's still, his body still knows how to do what's necessary to beat a lot of good golfers. I think that's kind of Paul at certain tournaments. You get Paul at USDGC, you get Paul at Maple Hill, you get Paul, heck, at Worlds. He knows New London like no one else. European Open. Like, I still think that there are chances of, like, flashes where we'll see Paul be in contention. I do think the days of Paul being filling the shoes of what Anthony Barella and Calvin Heimberg and those guys are doing right now, I do think those days are over.
For good?
For good. Yeah, I'm willing to say. I don't think Paul, oh, I don't think Paul will get,
he's
back.
He's like 33.
But I don't think he's going to get back to week in, week out, he's the guy to beat. I just don't see that happening. I don't see Ricky Wysocki being that guy.
Oh, come on.
Anthony Barella, Gannon Burr, Calvin Heimberg. I mean, and then you look
down the list. Calvin hasn't won in a year.
He's still been in the top five all but one event for almost a full calendar year.
He hasn't been the guy to beat for a year.
There's only four guys beating him on average each week.
I'm just saying, though, he hasn't been the guy to beat for an entire year now.
If you beat Calvin in the last, since June of this year, all but one event, you're in the top five.
That doesn't mean you win, though. Like, but, like, being the guy, like, to beat, being the guy who got to beat is Gannon AB right now, because they're winning like every other event
for this year. Yeah.
But I think, I mean, saying that about Paul is one thing, about Rick is crazy. I think there's
a,
I think
Rick is a much hotter take. I think Paul, Rick, I don't think's that hotter
Rick
take.
Could rattle off the next four events, top four or five, and it wouldn't surprise me at all. But I mean, Paul, I'm not quite willing to go there yet, but I think there's still a chance that he could put together a good season or a good season or two. But yeah, it's,
well,
definitely,
a good season and being where AB is right now are two different things.
Yeah. Well, let's check in on AB at the end of the season, because I don't want to get my hopes up.
I said where AB is right now.
Yeah. I mean,
right
no.
Now. If he does it for the whole season, you'd have to call him something like Calvin Heimberg. The next player down on the list.
Calvin Heimberg didn't do this for the whole season either.
The next player.
What are you talking about?
So what would give AB, you get to the end of the season and you think, holy frick, AB just had an insane season. What is your, like, requirement for that to have happened the rest
for
of the year?
For an insane season? Well, it's weird. When you put in the stat, when you put in three wins early in the year, because three wins is an insane season already. When you look at, no matter what he does, I won't say no matter what, because obviously pending, he just takes 70th on average. Realistic scenarios. Let's just say that for the rest of the season, he doesn't win again, but he just is, like, in contention a lot. Similar to Calvin, in contention a lot. You know, only has a couple bad finishes. That's the end of a season. You're going to look back at it, and he still might have the most wins of any player. So that's the weird thing is, like, by the end of the season, we'd be like, man, AB really fell off. But you're going to look back, just like we did with Calvin last year, and be like, holy cow. So I think, honestly, would it come because of the, you know, we move on so quickly from things, you know, it's going to depend on, like, when his last win of the year is, a lot of it. Because I think the difference between him winning, let's say he wins five events on the year. He's won three already. If he were to win those next two to make five in the next couple months, I think we'd look at the season differently than if he spread them out one, two through the rest of the year. I think that second scenario, we'd look at it as a better season because he would be there constantly. We can, when we're sitting here in October, we can forget the first 3 months of the season. Like, we'll look back and be like, that was awesome, but it won't be quite as fresh in our brains, and we won't be considering him the player that we are now. So that can be the weird thing about disc golf, when you bunch your wins in like that. But I mean, he's in the driver's seat right now, because I think, I mean, what, five wins is kind of the standard as far as, like, if you get, I mean, did Simon have four?
Simon, I think
Gannon had five, but including
it's
a
tough
silver.
It's tough because you have to throw in silvers, freaking silver events.
Because here's what I'll say is, you know, I like to talk about Pro Tour seasons in the scheme of winning. I'm not mad that Calvin won player of the year last year. I think that he was totally fine. He totally deserved it. I think there was an argument for Isaac. I'm fine that Calvin got it. But regardless of what happens at all, if AB is to win a major this year on top of what he's already done, that season is probably impossible to beat. Not impossible, like, numerically, but as far as what's realistically going to happen, if he were to just add a major onto what he has right now, and then, heck, if he threw another win on there in a major, forget about it. But if he just adds a major and he ends the season with three pro tours and a major, that is going to be very, very tough. The only guy that can beat that is Gannon Burr, I'd have to imagine.
I would agree. Okay, so one follow-up question. At what point did Calvin become not the guy to beat?
At what point did he become not... Probably later in last season when we just realized that, like, oh my gosh, it's been a long time.
So you think we got
to
the end of last season and Calvin Heimberg wasn't the guy to beat anymore?
If you consider it literally, yeah, he was not the guy to beat anymore because, like,
even though he was the only one in the top five every week, he wasn't the guy to beat anymore.
It depends on how you're saying it. If you're saying he's the guy to beat, like he's the guy who's playing consistently the best, yes. But if you're saying he's the guy to beat, like he's going to win if you don't, then no, because he wasn't going to win if you don't.
Well, there are several times if you take the person who beat him out, he won.
No, he didn't take that many. He didn't take that many seconds where he lost by like one stroke, though. That's what we were just talking about on debate like last night.
Well, yeah, but then Brody called that out as a cherry picked stat.
I don't know. I'm just saying.
I'm just curious, if chess.com didn't happen, would you have still considered Calvin Heimberg to be the guy to beat? If we're now in April, 2 months away from being a full calendar year of him missing, never being outside the top five, is he the guy?
No, I like that. Listen, I am, like I just said, I'm a big wins and losses guy. So I'm okay with dying on the hill that, like, if I've seen an entire year and you're just hanging around, but you're not winning, I'm not going to call you the guy to beat.
Okay.
Because you're not winning. Like, you have not been a winner in a year. So therefore, like, that doesn't threaten me. Obviously, if you beat Calvin, you're probably pretty high up in their standings, but it doesn't mean that you're going to win.
There you go. Okay. I disagree with it, but we'll move on. This is the return of Eagle McMahon this weekend. A lot of hype around this. His first time throwing all gyro. Well, not all gyro. Actually, probably is all gyro. First time with MVP on his back, coming back from intense injury. We don't fully know or about to see. But what are you expecting out of him, and what would make this tournament a win for Eagle?
Yeah, this is really exciting. I think it's awesome that we're getting Eagle back. It's going to be so fun to watch him throw MVP. I'm very pumped about it. It's a bummer when we don't have the best of our best, and I think Eagle hopefully will get back to that point quickly if he's not there right away, where he's up at the top of the leaderboard. He's fun to watch. I think a win for him at this tournament is... anytime you're coming off an injury, in his mind, I don't know what his standards are, but as long as he feels healthy coming out of the tournament, he probably is going to be okay with it. You just don't want any of his injury issues to flare up. But looking at it, let's just assume that he is completely healthy and like that's not a problem. Then I think if he finishes inside the top 20, I'm like, all right, Eagle is going to be there. Like that's what I'm going to be. If he finishes outside the top 20, I'm going to be like, He might need a little time to adjust, but if he's already inside the top 20 first event back, and if he gets any closer top 10, it's going to be like, okay, any week now, Eagle could be a threat to win. That's going to be the feeling. I'll be very quick to jump to that because, even with the injury, he's also switching to a very different bag. So that's going to be something to look at. And it's kind of like Simon, where we were immediately looking to see Simon play one good event with that bag, and it didn't take long to be like, okay, the bag's not going to be a problem. That he's going to be just fine. And these guys are talented enough, it shouldn't be. But I think that's going to be the thing with Eagle. Like, if he goes out there first event and takes 15th with the new disc coming off the injury, he'd be like, okay, Eagle's just fine. He's going to be, once he shakes off a little bit of rust, these guys have all been on tour for months now. He's going to be a threat to win. I think anything inside the top 20 would be a humongous win for him.
Yeah, I think there's kind of two ways to look at this, right? I think from a fan perspective, I fully agree. I think Eagle inside the top 20 means he will probably be in contention in a few weeks. I think from an Eagle McMahon perspective, if I can get... It's similar when we were talking Paul at chess.com, right? Like, if Eagle gets through this event, feels like he was able to throw the disc as hard as he... because I would imagine how long he waited, he's coming back at 100% or close to it. So if he's able to feel like he threw the disc hard, he was able to throw whatever shot he wanted to throw whenever he wanted to throw it, and he's pain-free, I think that's a win as Eagle coming back. Now, if I do all of that and I'm in 50th, uphill battle ahead of me. I got to figure some things out. But I do think coming back from an injury, there's like that part of just like finish the tournament pain-free. That's a win for Eagle. A win as an Eagle fan is definitely getting him into that top 20, top 15. If he gets into contention, holy cow, which it's not that crazy. You made the point before the show of like, the last time Eagle kind of came back from a little bit of time off with an injury, he played some of the greatest golf I've ever seen and won the European Open.
Yeah, definitely a case of not going to be shocked if he came out and won.
Yeah.
Like, it's when you're as talented as Eagle is and you've thrown discs for this long, he could come out and win, and I'd be like, that's Eagle.
The other thing, too, is like, obviously switching manufacturers, 9 times out of 10 is a non-storyline. The 1 out of 10 I feel like it really is when you're going from non-gyro to gyro. Because say what you want, whether you believe the gyro technology or not, the discs fly different. As someone That's who has went from a normal bag to a full gyro bag for a month, there's an adjustment period. But the key here is Simon Lazat just went through this.
Exactly.
And Simon Lazat came from Discmania to Gyro. And Simon Lazat and Eagle McMahon were basically brothers at Discmania. They know each other's games better than pretty much anyone else.
Yeah.
So if there's anyone who's going to be able to make this adjustment super easy for Eagle, it's Simon. And Eagle has now had months and his whole rehab where he's relearned how to play has been with Gyro.
Right.
So I don't think there's going to be an adjustment period on the course anymore. I think that adjustment period's already happened. I think any weird adjustments with play is pure injury.
Yeah,
is
even,
what he's adjusting.
Even
to.
Having Simon's a huge advantage, because I think Gyro is one of the few companies where like you don't just hear somebody be like, "Oh, you like rocks? This is that version." Like, it's kind of sits in its own area as far as the discs. That you
that's why I struggled so hard. I was like,
yeah.
I was trying to get people to compare it to Innova, and so many people who were at that time, it's different now, but were at that time
Gyronauts,
they weren't coming from Innova or anything. They were coming from, like, I've always been with MVP. You want a straight mid? Yeah. This is what it is. I'm like, I want to beat up Casey Rock. Help me. But having Simon go through it, even James Conrad from Innova, like, he's got all the advice he needs. So, and I do think it's a great point of like he relearned how to play from his injury with Gyro.
Yeah.
He's going to be just fine. As far as that goes, it's just a question of what's about to happen with him. Now, we just were talking about a bunch. Simon Lazat, reigning champion here, took down this event last year, just had a solid performance at Jonesboro. Do you think he has a solid chance of the repeat this year?
I think he has a great chance. We'll see if he can add to his guitar collection. If they go with that trophy again, I'm sure they will, because I think a lot of people liked it last year. But yeah, I think he has a great chance. He found his momentum. Anytime a player can kind of find their game and their momentum right before an event they won previously, you obviously got to be feeling pretty good about that. Simon can be a guy who has to, he hits little hot spurts, and typically when he hits them, he does capitalize and win. That's the thing about Simon, is you know a player is as talented as he is when all it takes is just for him to get a, just kind of find his game and let it click. And when it does, you know, he wins so often. That's one of the key differences between, you know, some players and others, is Simon, the reason he's been able to win multiple events in these past few seasons is when he's on, he just capitalizes. You know, you can look at a guy who has what some people would say is streaky play, 20th, 30th, 50th, first, 45th, 37th, first. And you can say, well, they're just inconsistent. But what I like to think about is when they're having a good weekend, they were winning. Because in Simon's, you don't see a lot of second, third, fourth, fifth a lot. He did just have one last week. But I feel like it was like he's not really around the leaderboard, and then he'd win. And so I just see Simon as a guy, like when he's on, he just goes out and wins. He capitalizes on when he's playing hot. And that is when the tour is so hard to win on right now, when you are having your weekend, you better make it count. That could be your chance to get your one win that season. So I think if he can keep what he had going last week into this weekend, then he absolutely could repeat.
Yeah, I think the biggest question here is how's his back doing? He he had some PT on it before the final round at Jonesboro. He dropped out of, I believe it was the Skins match in Memphis that they were doing on like Monday or Tuesday, but he still said he has full plans to play Music City, because we are getting close to he's going to be having a second child and taking an extended period off.
Yeah.
We're getting very close to that. So I think in his head, he's like, I just need to get to that period and then I can rehab whatever it is going on with his back. It didn't sound like it was a super serious injury. It sounds like it just kind of was like a muscular thing. Like he just kind of tweaked it a little bit. So that is a question mark, but if that's fine and he's able to get it loose enough where he can play, then you have to like him, because I mean, he is a streaky player, and that when his game's on, it's on. And when his game is on, he, like Eagle, like AB, like Gannon, like Calvin's one of the most arm talented guys in the world, where like, it's going to be hard to beat if Simon Lazat's the guy whose game's on. So if that's this weekend, I love it. But the other guy, the man of the year, AB, lost by one stroke here last year. Do you think he can go 4 for 6 with another win here?
Absolutely. When the snowball is rolling downhill like it is right now for AB, and he's going to another course that he was having success at last year, which is just cherry on top, because I don't believe he played well at Jonesboro last year, and that doesn't even matter. The pressure gets lesser and lesser the further that he keeps moving into these wins. Like I was saying earlier, 3 wins is already going to be tough to beat for anybody other than maybe Gannon this whole year. So when the ball is rolling downhill like that, and he can just do no wrong at the moment, and he's seen that he can win in multiple ways. It's not like he's going to get behind and then think, oh, I can't, you know, I'm out of it or whatever. Like, yeah, he has to be the heavy, heavy, heavy favorite this week. There's no reason to think otherwise. And I'd be shocked if he's not in contention again. And I think it's very likely he wins.
I really want him to be in contention or near the lead, because I want to see it in person. I want to see how good AB is in person.
Oh my gosh.
Because like I've watched AB play before, but I've never watched AB at this level. And like what he's doing right now is insane. So if you're listening, AB, and you just have like a switch you flip or something, go ahead and flip it so that I can see
what is what you're capable of here. What is for you? I'll answer mine, and then I'll let you answer because you're actually going to be there. Your dream final day card at this event, lead card. Mine would probably be AB. Well, I'm going to say dream realistic.
Okay.
Because I'm not just going to throw Paul in there because that's not going to happen. AB, Gannon, Eagle, probably Simon.
That was mine.
Yeah.
Now, I was going to go a different order, but yeah.
I think that would be pretty electric.
If you get Eagle, Simon, Gabe, Gannon, AB, now, for the sake of this post, I'll just take Eagle out because not super likely.
That's realistic.
I'll just put Calvin into that place. Fair. I'll switch Eagle for Calvin. But that mix there, like if those four guys are going blow for blow,
be excited.
I mean, that'd be incredible. Now, let's talk about the final two here. Gannon Berg, Calvin Heimberg, tied for third last year. What does this tournament and a shot at another win mean for them in their season right now?
Well, for Gannon, I think it would be a very quick punch back to AB. Like, hey, I'm still here. Like, now we both, you know, it's like, you know, tying AB back up because he already has two, right?
Gannon, I think he has one.
Or he just has one, yeah, because it was, what, 2-1 was what they were at. So it would be, so it'd be even more important because it would be him getting that second win and being like, I'm also going to be a guy like that this year. I know he's been early in the season. He was kind of thrown into that trio. AB has kind of moved himself ahead of everybody as like just the clear guy. But I think that this win would be like Gannon saying, you're not going to run away from me that quick in win totals. I'm going to be around. And I think that it would be good for him. Not nearly as crucial as it is for Calvin, because we just kept mentioning. And I want to clarify, when I say he's not the player to beat, this is how I think about this. Player to beat for me is like, you have to beat this guy to win. If you beat Calvin by just one finishing place for the last year, you did not win that tournament. That is, there was a guy that beat him. So
but it wasn't the same guy.
Right.
But Calvin of the whole field was the guy to beat.
But I wouldn't even say that. I wouldn't say that
about
anybody.
A guy to beat.
That's what I'm saying. Okay. Right now, AB is the guy to beat because he's winning more times than he's not. So he is the guy that you probably have to beat. If there's not a clear guy like that, then I wouldn't say it, because I'm very much a black and white. Did you win or did you not? When it comes to that sort of thing. And so when I talk about Calvin, it's like, yeah, if you just finished one spot ahead of him for the last year, that doesn't mean you won. You did not win, in fact. So that's where I'm putting that out there. But for Calvin, this is a huge event. And I know people will hate that take because they love Calvin. And I like Calvin too, but he's in a very tough slump right now. Like it's just the nature of what's going on. I think that Calvin, I know he's dealing with an injury right now, doesn't really have a forehand in his game, and he's still playing great golf. I just want to see him put something together down the stretch. That's what it comes down to. I was never, ever, ever on that bus with Calvin when it was early into this slump. It only been a few months since he's won. And I was like, he's in contention every week. The problem is it's been going on long enough that I've seen him lose tournaments that he should not have lost. He's making mistakes in the final round and he's costing himself tournaments. And that's where the narrative creeps in of like, is Calvin just not, he's not able to win right now. And this is not something that's going to last, because he is going to be inevitable event. And Calvin's playing too good to not just win. I'm sure he'll win at least once during this season, probably twice. But right now he needs it to get it off his back. When you are a top player in golf, you are susceptible to, you know, if Mason Ford, let's just use him as an example, went out and won this week, he's not going to be thinking 4 months from now, oh my gosh, it's been a little while since I won. I got off that hot start. This is just part of the game when you are a top player. It's just the way you're going to be looked at. And it's a great news for that player because it means they rock. But Calvin Heimberg is a guy like that because he's so good, because he's considered one of the top players. When you go a whole year without a victory in a sport where right now the guys that other guys were considering the best are winning, and winning a bunch if you're AB, you know, that starts to stick out. So I think that winning for him would be massive. I think of anybody on the tour, he needs this win the most.
Yeah, no, I think Gannon, this is a important win to remind us he still exists to a certain extent, if that even makes sense. Like, because he went from being in the same vein, like always mentioned with AB. It was AB and Gannon are having a crazy start. AB, but then AB has just like went one step farther to where AB is the talk of the town. Yeah. And if you're Gannon Burr and you get a win here, you're right back in, like, because two wins, three wins this early in the season, they're both crazy enough that they're both talked about on the same vein.
Well, and that's the thing,
but it, you need that other win, because like if we keep going and Gannon and AB wins here, and then AB picks up one more win, all of a sudden it's 5-1. You're not on the same page anymore.
This is what I tell people when they get so fed up about, like, they don't, like, you're not considering the podiums and you're weighing the wins too much. The wins are ultimately what's going to carry weight. You know, there's a reason we're all talking about AB right now. Gannon is having an insane season. The guy's been in, like, the top 10 in, like, every event practically.
I think he's been in top 4 except for the last one.
Yeah, like, he's been all over it. But when you're, if he was doing that and AB was doing that and they both had around the same amount of wins, that's when we were talking about them in the same way. But all of a sudden, when a guy has two more wins than that, that just outweighs everything. So ultimately, you do have to get it done and grab those wins. And so, like, that's why this is important.
Yeah, Gannon's worst finish is 7th at Jonesboro. Yeah. Other than that, he went 2nd, 4th, 1st, 4th.
That's what I'm saying. Insane season. But he is 2nd fiddle right now to AB, because AB is having that season but with two more wins. And that's just what's going to matter.
Yeah, and Calvin Heimberg, it's a very important
And he's 3rd fiddle because he's been doing basically that other than one event.
Yeah.
But not one yet.
It's an important event. Because, I mean, it would shut everyone up. Like, a Calvin win here, you can't say anything about, has Calvin forgotten how to win? Because, like, that narrative has picked up. I think we started the narrative at the end of last season.
Yeah.
Like, we were saying it, people thought we were crazy, whatever. Now we're months into the second season, and, like, still there's no win. We're coming right up on a full calendar year. If you could consider event to event, it's been a year of Calvin not winning. So a win here stops all that.
Well, yeah, say,
it's all over.
The good news about our narrative that we like to create with these players is it starts out as just a, oh, they're in a slump, they haven't won for a while, and like that narrative is like very subjective, and but like once we go to like the they've forgotten how to win, even if they go 3 years and then win, people will still slam dunk on us, even though we were pretty much right for the last year. It's when I said Matty O couldn't win, and it went on for like 2.5 years, and like, so like I was kind of right for 2.5 years, but just because he won one tournament, because I made it black and white, pass fail, he can't win, you get to slam dunk on me. Once I start saying Calvin, and I haven't saying he forgot how to win, I'm just thinking it's getting to that point. But once I decide to say it, then as soon as he does, even if it's 5 years from now, you can still slam dunk on me, because it is a very black and white pass fail statement.
So. Yeah, but it's important, because I do think I think I like other people more at Champions Cup. Once we get to the golf courses, I like other people more than I won't be where Calvin's like this is the last event. This opening stretch was a really big stretch where every event I felt like these courses are like Calvin Heimberg courses.
How far would you have to get into the future, pending no more injuries, to say that he's forgotten how to win? Just like straight up, yeah, Calvin's forgot how to win.
If we're here next year.
Next year.
Yeah, so if Jonesboro comes and goes and it's been 2 full years since he won. Assuming he's still doing what he's doing, where he's in top 5 every week.
Yeah.
Like, if you go top 5 every week for, again, takeoutchess.com, we're at almost a full year if he's in the top 5 without a win.
That's crazy.
You got, because like, he had the chance, the same chance AB had at Jonesboro. They had the same shot they had to execute. AB did it. He didn't. He lost.
That's what I'm saying, man.
Like, at some point, you got to look at it and be like, and it wasn't even like, oh, he threw a good shot and it just like, no, it came out on an awful angle. Like, he threw a bad shot there. So I'm not there yet.
But
a year from now, I'm 100% there.
Yeah.
And knowing me, 6 months from now, I'm there. Because like, it'll probably just like, these things, time goes by and you're just like, I forgot the last time I saw Calvin win.
It depends on how many of those happen where like he's right there and loses down
the more stretch. Time he gets in contention and he does something to cost him the tournament that was just like an unforced error, like, because as much as AB won that tournament, Calvin Heimberg lost it.
Yeah.
And really, Ben Callaway lost it.
Harder.
Ezra Aderholt lost it. There's a lot of people that lost that tournament as much as AB won. But Calvin was one of them. And the more that happens, then the more this narrative grows.
Yeah.
But with all that being said, let's throw it over to Joe to hear her thoughts on FPO.
Music City Open, presented by Lone Star Discs, will be played at Millridge Park in Tennessee. In 2023, it was a tight battle up until the last round. On lead card coverage, we had Kristen Tatar, Macy Valadez, Jennifer Allen, and Holland Hanley. Throughout the round, there was tons of up and down movement on the leaderboard and lots of birdies and lots of bogeys. But Kristen ended up just keeping it clean and playing a smooth round. She ended up just mostly taking pars and then grabbing the birdies when she could. Some players that snuck into the top 10 last year were Rebecca Cox, Evelina Solanin, Missy Gannon, and Heidi Lenya. If we remember back to the 2024 U.S. Disc Golf Championship, we saw a lot of these players actually in the mix and in contention to take down that event. I honestly think that all of these women are playing really good golf right now, and any one of them could be in the mix at this event. Let's take a little look back on last weekend's disc golf and just kind of see how the momentum is shifting and moving, just to get a better idea of what we have to look forward to for this week. Kristen ended up taking down the Jonesboro Open at minus 22 strokes. She shot 9 strokes better than Holland Hanley, who ended up taking solo second place. She had to make a very big putt on the 18th hole to secure that solo second. Evelina was coming in hot on her heels, though. She ended up shooting a pretty hot round. I think it was around minus 5. And she really had some momentum going for her. She was making some putts and she was driving really well. And she ended up securing solo third. Now, obviously, anyone can win here in FPO right now. But will Kristen's dominance end up leading her into another victory? That's a good question, because she did win this event last year. We do know that she probably has some positive memories and she's the reigning champion. Or will we have another unique winner in FPO? Currently, we have 5 unique winners in FPO and only one of them has been repeated, which is Kristen Tatar. So it will be very interesting and I'll definitely be tuning into this event. I hope you guys do too. And back over to you guys.
All right. Appreciate that, Joe. As she mentioned, there's been 5 unique winners with only one repeating, that person being Kristen, who happens to be the reigning champ and off back-to-back wins if you include the 8-tier she beat Onat. Is this momentum too much to overcome for the field?
Well, especially the field this week with 2 of our star players out, I would say definitely yes. Kristen, it's one thing to pick against her when she's lost a few in a row. It's another thing to pick against her when she's just won, and now she's got 2 momentum-carrying weeks in a row. You'd have to be crazy to think that she's not going to make it a third. I think that, yeah, she's in a great spot here. I think this would be a big win for her heading into the major.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to, you know, I'll just go ahead. I'm not even going to fill in this statement because I'll just answer the next question. Because out of the field, Joe mentioned several players that played well here last year. They've had solid starts this season. Who do you think in this field poses the biggest threat to Kristen on this course? My answer to that is Kristen Tatar.
Yeah.
Kristen.
That's my answer every time.
Yeah. Well, it's earlier in this season when she had that like 3-event slump. It's crazy to even say a 3-event slump because like that's not even a slump. I could have argued a few players. Most of those players aren't in the field. That's still here is Evelina. And I don't love Evelina at this course. She struggled here last year. I think she lost by over 10 to Kristen when it was all said and done. So who poses the biggest threat in this field?
Herself.
If Hayley King showed up and was the Hayley King she could be, probably her. But other than that, it's just if Kristen doesn't play her game, that's the only way she loses.
Somebody correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm just pretty sure I've never seen somebody duel with Kristen when Kristen is playing really good golf, not just okay, but really good golf, and beat her.
The only one was Anniken Steen. Kristen wasn't really messing up.
She came out the gate slow.
But she came out the gate
right,
slow.
Right, that's what I'm saying.
No, you went blow for blow down the stretch.
Because somebody, if Kristen's playing really good golf, that means you need to play 10, 20 rated golf over 3 rounds to beat her. And nobody's doing that. No way.
The only person that's really done it recently is Owen Scoggins. She's not in the field.
Exactly.
So, point standings going into this one. I am back of the bus because Trevor and Joe had the same picks, and they did better than mine.
Your son is peeking at me through the door.
Liz did tell me that Luke is outside saying dada. So, anyways, I am Trevor's in the lead at 31. Joe is at 28, and I'm at 26.
Got to take another point from you after Chris doesn't win.
Yeah, we do have a bet on the line. Reminder, I will give Trevor a point if Chris doesn't win. Trevor will give me 4 points if Chris does win.
That would hurt.
So hopefully that happens.
That'd be a crazy cash.
We'll go straight to our MPO picks. Here's the deal. Okay, let me talk to you mano a mano. I think this is the week for Calvin. I think Calvin Heimberg takes it down. I think Anthony Barella is obviously going to be in contention, so I put him in second, and I'd be dumb not to have Gannon Burr in my top three as well. So Calvin 1, AB 2, Gannon Burr 3.
I mean, I don't hate it. I don't think I'm going to trade out Calvin for Simon Lozada, but I have Simon in third because I think he's going to play well again this week. I've got Gannon in second and AB in first. It's just so hard to bet against. Like, he's now proven, like, 3 out of 5 is something I just didn't really think was going to be possible on this tour. So now that I know that somebody playing it, when he's playing at the level he's playing at, that he can just go out and win, you know, forget what are the odds of a guy winning on this tour multiple times in a row. It just doesn't even matter. He's doing it. So at that point, I got to go with him. He's doing something that Kristen does to the FPO field right
now. Yeah, honestly. And Joe's picks are AB to win, Calvin to come in second, and Gannon Burr to come in third. We'll keep rolling with Joe. She picks
so Simon's
Kristen.
Gonna be my key there.
Yeah, Simon's your key. Kristen Tatar to win for her, Holland Handley to come in second, Evelina to come in third.
Ditto. That's twice in a row.
Oh,
we've done
nailed
that.
Him. I switched out Holland Handley for Haley King, so I went Kristen, Evelina second, Haley third. That's
fair
my
enough.
Top three.
Fair enough.
Dark horse pick, I want Silas Schultz. He wasn't here last year, but he played good at Jonesboro last year. Probably should have looked at how he played at Jonesboro this year, but I didn't. I'm just riding with it.
He cashed, but I saw his Instagram post. I believe he cashed, but he didn't play great in his to his standards. But he's been quiet this year. I've been really looking for him to have like
this is his breakout event.
Just surge.
Thank you, Silas.
Yeah, he's super talented. I got Gavin Babcock. He had one blip on his radar or on his season so far, but he just took 7th last week. He's on the up and up. I see him as a guy who's still kind of finding his ceiling, so I like Gavin.
I liked him. I looked at him. He did really bad at Music City last year. That's what scared me away, but you never see. And Joe Henderson picked Chris Clements for her Dark Horse pick. So that wraps it up.
Every time she picks somebody that kind of surprises me, that person wins.
Yeah, there you go. That wraps it up for this week. Thank you all so much for tuning in. Get out there and watch some disc golf this weekend, and we'll be back Monday to wrap up all the action for you.